Today on Power Tips Unscripted, we talk to Dean Tompkins, owner integrator of Payne and Payne Renovations and Design in the greater Cleveland area. Increasing efficiency is one of the easiest ways to increase your company's profitability. And Toyota's lean manufacturing concept is a fantastic way to do just that. In today's episode, Dean will discuss how you can use the value stream mapping tool of lean philosophy to rapidly improve your business. And we'll hear all about it in just a minute.
60% of the time, it works every time.
What are you people? On dope?
Hi, I'm Victoria Downing, and welcome to Power Tips Unscripted, where we talk about tips, tactics, and techniques to help you build a strong, profitable remodeling company. And I'm here with my co-host, Mark Harari.
How are you?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
You know, we're getting to talk about one of my favorite subjects again today.
What's that?
Lean, efficiency, doing more with less.
I thought it was just money.
Well, that too. It doesn't all come down to that, but a great deal of it comes down to that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Increased profitability, especially today when, you know, business is booming for so many people and it's so hard to find skilled, talented employees.
It's a good problem to have. If you got to have a problem, that's the one I want.
No kidding. I agree with that. So, should we dive in?
Dive away.
Okay. Today, we're talking with Dean Tompkins from Payne and Payne Renovations and Design. Payne and Payne provides full service remodeling to the greater Cleveland area in Ohio. Dean and his business partner, David Payne, recently embarked on a lean journey, and Dean is here to discuss that journey with us today. Welcome, Dean.
Thanks for having me, Victoria.
You know, we've talked about the concepts of lean and just improving efficiencies a couple of times on this podcast, but I was really excited to talk to you because you're actually putting it into place in your remodeling company. I'm excited to learn a little bit more about the specifics of your journey and why you did it. So give me a little background. What got you started on this path? And, you know, what is lean to you?
So lean has always been a passion of mine. I'm actually a mechanical engineer by degree.
Okay.
And started out actually in manufacturing. So
okay.
I was kind of pulled over to construction about 4 years after college, but I actually was working on lean and that was my passion before I moved. So it's just been kind of biding the time, waiting for the right moment to actually start using it. I remember I first tried to do it like day one and I was naive and had no idea, you know, we weren't measuring in microns. We were measuring in 16ths of an inch and mm-hmm. the culture shock of all that. Now I have the team in place that could really embrace it and run with it.
Well, so let's start there. When you first tried this, what was it that happened that made it unsuccessful, that first attempt?
I think it was just having the right people in place and the right, I don't know if culture is the right word, but training and building your company out to a certain point, right? Like our problems at that point weren't necessarily leaning out the process right then. There were other issues. So we weren't evolved to the point where this was the right next step.
So now that you have your team in place, how did you start at the second go around that made it successful?
So with heavy training, right? So the first thing I did is I actually had to refresh myself. So I read a bunch of books again. One of the best out there is Lean Thinking. It has a lot of different case studies. And then in specific, you know, to what I was trying to do, I wanted to do value stream mapping. Learning to See is a great book for that as well. I concentrated more on the pre-construction side of things for this go around.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't just dive in and do the whole shebang. Like I think our industry is very complicated and there's a lot of generalities you have to put in place that, you know, on a manufacturing floor, you know, things are a little more precise and repeatable. So you have to really think through the approach up front. So yeah, a lot of training, I put together kind of almost a mini value stream map. I remember reading one of the books where somebody kind of compared, you know, how unlean Christmas cards are, right? You always take like a huge batch of Christmas cards, you sign them all, then you take them all and you stuff the envelopes, then you write the return addresses, then you do the stamps. Like it's like completely the opposite of lean. So I actually timed myself doing 50 envelope stuffings and like kind of created my own little process. And then with the team, we did an actual lean exercise on that. So it was controllable. It was small. It was something I had data with, and it was something that wasn't tied to what we were doing. Because everybody has preconceived notions. As soon as you start messing with what they're doing, there's the yeah buts come into place, right? But this was easy. So I made it fun. I had one of the guys, you know, kind of said that he had a motor car company, but they have poor quality, so they always have to mail out these warranty cards. So the entire thing was waste in and of itself. So the goal was to have the team be able to see where the value is and what's not value added. And the whole thing was non-value added, but everybody's first attempt is to sub-optimize a process rather than look at the whole picture, which is the point of value stream mapping. So by the end of it, you know, everybody decided, well, we got to go fix the quality problem, not send out these cards. But if we are going to send out the cards, let's do them on pre-postmarked, pre-addressed, you know, like we got out all the steps basically out of the process. So, but the team came to that realization on their own. So it was a good primer for what we were going to do.
What was the net improvement in that process?
Like 80. I mean, that one was crazy. 80% or something.
80%.
But I mean, the whole thing was non-value added, and that was an easy. I set it up as a layup, basically.
No, right. But it was a great way to show them how you can look at something. And to your point, like you get really defensive when people start messing with your own processes that you work on every day. So putting them through an exercise that they weren't attached to was a great tactic.
Now, so back up for me a little bit, though, and define value stream mapping for those of our listeners who aren't quite as familiar with the whole thing.
Okay, so like in anything you do, there's you're ultimately trying to provide value to the customer. Anything that you do above and beyond is muda, and anything that you fall short on is muda, or waste. That's a Japanese term for waste.
Okay.
So you really have to hone in on what the client actually would pay for. What they want. And I think traditionally, and I might have this number wrong, like 90% of what companies do is waste.
Wow.
It is actual what you should be doing. It might even be worse than that. I might have those numbers wrong, but it's a staggering number. So really just focusing in on what is waste will have a huge impact to what you do.
So give me an example. In our world of remodeling, what have you discovered that's waste? Because, you know, you think about all the steps that go into from the time a lead comes to the time a project is finished. There's many steps. What did you take out?
So some of them were easy. Like we had a couple where we were having a meeting to have a meeting. You know, it was like we were going to have a meeting with a client, but we had to get the entire team involved first to make sure we knew what was going on so that we were more educated from the client. But really, we were wasting time, right? Like, so you got to schedule a meeting, and usually that'd be like 5 days because everybody's out. And then you have to schedule the meeting with client. So there's another 5 days. And it's like, all right, just huddle before you leave and go do it, right? And then you just cut out all that time.
Yeah.
Like it's just that type of waste was just throughout our process. And actually, that was one of the biggest things because we just focused on the design side is kind of had an epiphany that we were actually setting the pace of the waste with the client because we were always scheduling in week increments. So we were automatically building in lead time or queue time into the process when some of the clients were perfectly fine with meeting twice a week.
Okay.
So we could just speed up. Yeah.
So, okay. So I could understand for those clients that weren't willing, how did you figure out that some clients are willing, and how did you say, okay, let's meet, if it's Tuesday, let's meet on Thursday? Just ask them that, and they go, oh, that's too soon, then you just back it out a few more days?
Yeah, and it doesn't always work, but, you know, one of the benefits of the actual COVID crisis we went through is Zoom, right?
Yeah.
Clients are much more adaptable now to our schedules because we can do quick Zoom meetings, so it might not be that we have two in person in a week, but we might have one in person and one Zoom meeting to recap what we discussed.
Okay. And have you found that that's cut that design time significantly?
Yeah. Yeah. And really when you look at the overall process, so like for us, you know, when we laid it out, you do what's called a current state. Mm-hmm. So you go through and you form a team and you go through and you average out how long it takes to do each step and how long it average weights. And it's important you don't get bogged down in the details, because like in a manufacturing plant, you'd be doing time studies and all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, you know, in our industry, we don't have that kind of data and we're too variable. So we would just pull each person who does the job and ask them a range, and then we'd average it out and that's what we go with. So once we did the current state and mapped that all out, we kind of knew that from first time the client signs off and puts money down to design with us to the time we start a project, it was 83 working days.
That sounds like a long time.
That's a lot. I actually think most remodelers are probably in that similar time frame, though. Mm-hmm. Once we went through and highlighted where all those stoppage points were, we were able to shave that down from 83 to 63 without doing anything. We didn't add any processing time. Like the actual processing time of like people actually doing the work is only about 13 days. The rest is all wait time.
Really?
So we were able to shave out about 20 days just from how we order the steps. Like we didn't do anything crazy.
So could you give a few other examples? I mean, getting clogged up in design is such an issue for so many companies. That's kind of cool that you focused your efforts on that. So can you give me some real examples of what you did in that to cut that down?
Well, one of the main issues, you got when you go through and you do your current state, you've got to look at what metrics you're going to look at, right? So like Q times one, that's how much things wait between processing steps. We did percent complete and accurate. That was actually our biggest issue. And that means whatever comes from the last process into the next process, like, can you work with it? You know, is it 90% good? Is it 100% good? We found a couple steps where it was 0%. There was always a reloop back, right? So that was just creating a whole bunch of extra time. So we put a design to estimator handoff checklist in place, because there was a lack of standardization on even what a job should look like from one designer to the next coming into final estimating. So we realized it was just a knowledge gap. Mm-hmm. So we were able to put some standards in place to make sure that we're doing that all the time. The other thing we noticed is in one of the waste within, you know, there's I think 8 or 9 waste that Lean kind of professes there being. One of them is just unevenness of flow, right? Mm-hmm. So the other issue we were finding is that we were just pushing jobs into the design process. We would get a check and we're like, okay, when can you meet, right? And so we found, you know, guys, our project developers were kind of our bottleneck. You know, they were working on 10 projects at a time each, and it's just unsustainable. So what happens, like, imagine, you know, somebody throws you a ball. You can catch one ball. Imagine somebody throws you 2 balls. You can catch 2. You were taking a bucket of balls and throwing them at our guys and expecting them to catch them. So it came down to prioritization. So what we did is we put in place a what we call a parking lot. And Lean, they refer sometimes to like a grocery store, right? It's like a first in, first out pull system. And then we limited the amount that they could work on to 7 each at any given time, because that is kind of like what we need to put out. Like we determined we need to put out one job about every 8 days. So by doing the math, we were able to figure out like 7's like the right work in progress. Mm-hmm. What that did is it freed them up from doing random things on jobs that can't even start for months, right? So they're only focusing on what they need to. So that was actually a really huge benefit of just having that clarity of seeing what was happening in our current state and the designing it into the process for the future state to actually control that workflow.
What did you see change? Like, what were some of the practical things that changed because of that adaptation or modification?
So interesting enough, they were our bottleneck. They're now doing more work. We actually freed up our salespeople because one of our steps was to get Dave out of sales, right? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get so the owners aren't selling.
Yeah.
Our project developers and designers are now involved earlier on in the process, which removed him even more, but it also set them up with the knowledge they needed so we didn't have some of those handoff problems,
right,
which then made it smoother, and then we're controlling the workflow at that point. Okay. So that And then them controlling the workflow rather than a salesperson pushing it on them.
Yeah.
And allowed them to be more efficient and work on the right priorities.
Great.
Because it's really hard to tell an owner no when they ask you to do something.
Right, right.
So they kind of structured it out of the system.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Hey, Mark here. You know, one of the first marketing books I ever read was the aptly named Marketing by Richard Sandhusen. Although it was pretty good in that it had some useful information, it was very technical. It was like trying to read the warning label that came with pain medication. I had to read some parts 3 or 4 times just to understand what he was trying to say. You shouldn't have to slog through a dry, term-laden textbook like I did to successfully market your business. So I wrote Lobster on a Cheese Plate. How to stand out, attract the best clients, and win every sale that comes your way. It's shipping December 8th. But if you pre-order today, you'll save 34%. To learn more, peek inside the book, and watch the trailer, because of course I made a trailer, visit BeTheLobster.com. Now back to the show.
So in your world, just to give people a feel for the structure, you've got salespeople who sell it to the design phase, and then it gets handed off to a project manager?
We call it project developer.
Project developer.
So we've even further divided down into project teams, because what we were finding too is we had too many people talking to each other.
Okay.
So we've diversed it down or minimized it down to that point as well, to where one team pulls projects and another team pulls projects. So we always had the same designers working with the same project developers to minimize the amount of priority crossing.
Okay, right? so give me some numbers there. How many designers, how many project developers, how many salespeople?
So I currently have on the one team two full-time senior designer, or full-time designers, one assistant designer, and one project developer, and one assistant project developer. So that's one team. The other team is actually only a senior designer and a project developer.
Okay.
So the assistant project developer, the one, is going to move into full-time project developer eventually. So we're going to split off into three, but we're just biding our time until he's ready.
Now, do the project developers estimate?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
They
great.
Estimate and they kind of help. They're kind of like the guardrails for constructability, I would say.
Okay. All right. Great.
Mm-hmm. So they kind of help the designers out with, can we do this? Can we not?
Right. Okay.
Quality control.
So when you started this, what aspects of the Lean toolbox did you start with and how did you prep your team for it?
Yeah. So the value stream map was the big one. But first, they really needed to understand waste and what the drivers of waste are. Mm-hmm. So we went through an entire training exercise where I basically just pilfered off of other books.
R&D, man, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. So I just, the 8 or 9, I think I concluded 9. I think typically there's a lot to say 8. I did 9 main drivers of waste and went through that and then had them like brainstorm on real world examples within our, what we're doing. And then did that envelope kind of exercise. And that really cemented at home doing that. So, yeah.
Well, that was pretty interesting, the results you got from that. So was everybody on board right from the get, or were they skeptical? Or
they were on board from the get. And like I said, I have the right team, right? Like everybody in my company wants to move forward. We don't have any right person, right seat issues at the moment. So we're really energized and they're all moving in the same direction.
Now, what do you say to people who believe that Lean is really only applicable to manufacturing?
Yeah, I would say sometimes it's harder to see the other applications, but I couldn't imagine an industry with more waste than ours.
So, really?
Yeah, I mean, everything we do is still the same way we did it 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We have some technology improvements, but we really haven't moved beyond, that. So I think as, some of these techniques get into place and people start really diving into it, we should start to see some more, I don't know if industry changing is the right word, but actual movement in the right direction with how we set up. So commercial's already doing some of it, frankly. Like I've seen, you know, projects that have been done in a lean fashion where they're staggering, you know, finish out room to room, really condense down those lead times. But there's got to be a better way to what we do.
Yeah.
Somebody just needs to discover it.
You know, to me, it's if the people, if the it's going to be the top companies that put this into place, and they're going to continue to rise to the top. And a lot of the littler people, the smaller companies, people who don't do this are going to fall behind. With the way that skilled labor is, finding people, how difficult all that is, the more you can do with the people you have or fewer people, the better it's going to be for your company, I would think.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And that's why Remodeler's Advantage is so great, too, because smaller companies can learn and start to implement these things. Because, like, looking back, I think I would have better results if I had a facilitator. You know, immersed in lean.
Right.
Because sometimes, like, you know, I talk about like moving somebody's cheese, right?
Yep.
Like, I am moving their cheese, but I work with them. And we've had these fights before. You know, somebody from the outside who knows the concepts who could come in and say, hey, have you thought about this?
Yeah.
They're probably going to get a little more traction than I would. And I was very happy with our results. I think we did leave a lot of meat on the bone, but I also think we pushed it to the point where I kept people okay.
Yeah. So. So when are you going to take it from in your company? When are you going to take it into the production side?
Actually, we are starting this quarter. We just last week had our first training refresher course in lean how to do a current state map. This actually Thursday, we're starting our current state map of production.
Okay. I've got one more question for you. If you were going to give advice to another company owner who wanted to do this in their company, what piece of advice or pieces of advice would you give them?
Become educated on it. Read a lot. It's not rocket science. It's really simple concepts. Unfortunately, some of the textbooks on it are pretty dry. So I would say like books like The Goal, that kind of deals with bottlenecks. Lean Thinking has more case studies, but they're real world. Learning to See, like those, even Harley Davidson, Made in America, that's a great book. Kind of goes through like the quality control and lean process. Kind of turns you on to the concepts and starts to cement it. But then it gets somebody who knows what they're doing with it. Like I was lucky enough to be trained by somebody when I was, I didn't even know it, but when I was a co-op, he ended up traveling the world training lean.
Wow.
I was lucky enough to be, you know, underneath him at the time. I had no idea what lean was at the time. I just did it.
Dean, this next segment isn't the most efficient in the world, but it's a whole heck of a lot of fun. Are you ready for the lightning round?
Sure.
And now, here's the Remodeler's Advantage Lightning Round.
It's a trap.
All right. We're going to put 60 seconds on the clock. Here we go. What is your favorite business book and why?
Can I pass? No, I've been lean thinking just because is this what we're talking about today? I know there's others that are as impactful, but that one, from a lean standpoint, that's like the Bible of lean.
If you weren't a remodeler, what do you think you'd be doing?
Manufacturing engineering somewhere.
What are you not very good at?
I am not very good sometimes at patience.
Your room, your desk, or your car, which would you clean first?
Desk.
If someone wrote a biography about you, what would the title be?
That's a tough one. Slow and steady wins the race.
There you go.
Describe your worst elevator ride.
Like in actuality or in theory?
Whatever you like.
Oh, no, there's been some intoxicated ones. I would say with a pushy salesman who would
win. Yeah.
That would be pretty bad.
Describe your high school self in one word.
Dork.
Hey, well, this has been great, Dean. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. It's been very interesting. And again, I just find that it's something that I think all the remodelers who are listening to this should think about and how they can put, at least start putting pieces of it in place. Now, so I appreciate it. Thank you. We're going to put the links to those books in the show notes. But before you go, I want you to share with our listening audience your five words of wisdom and why they resonate with you.
I would say, don't be afraid to fail. And the reason why that resonates with me is because, like, even with just this, like, my first try at this didn't work. Mm-hmm. I just had to be patient and get the right time and the right people, and it was successful the second time. And that goes with about anything in business.
I think if you are innovative and you're starting to lead the pack, you are going to have some failures along the way. But good, great. Thank you so much, Dean. I very much appreciate it. And we'll have you back one day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dean.
You know, I know that this has been a popular topic on this show because it fascinates me so much. So I keep running into people that believe in it and inviting them on the show. But every time we have somebody on to talk about some aspect of this, they seem to deliver slightly different valuable information.
Slightly different?
Yeah. You know, it's like everybody's got a little bit of a hot topic. I thought it was really interesting that Dean had tried it and failed and then came back around and tried it again and had it succeed. I mean, you got to admit, that's amazing difference between 83 days to the 63 days. And that was only like the first go around. Holy crud.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, shaving 20 days of
working days.
Right.
That's a month.
Right.
You know, think about productivity. Think about the amount of revenue one could generate by cutting that sort of time out of the design process.
Yeah, and he made it sound like it was fairly easy to do.
Right.
They didn't have to add processes or anything to it.
Or add people.
Right.
They had to cut out things and simplify. It was great. I liked it a lot. So,
yeah.
There we go.
You're a fan.
I am.
You're a lean
fan. I'm going to get that book. I love reading case studies, real-life examples, the lean thinking.
Yes.
You'll put that in the show notes, yeah?
Yes, someone will.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
was good.
Great. Good.
That was great. Well, we want to thank Dean for taking the time and sharing his adventures in lean manufacturing principles. And we want to thank you for listening week in and week out. I am Mark Harari.
And I'm Victoria Downing. Thanks for being here.
This has been another episode of Power Tips Unscripted, the remodeler's guide to business. Visit www.remodelersadvantage.com to learn more about Roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program. There you can also find information about our business consulting services, upcoming live events, and much more. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
It's a beautiful day. It's beautiful.